You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Got any rights yet? I do.
Just like that lady Greta told me down by the cold creek. It don't matter if your bowls aren't dusty. Beer in the tackle box out on the flare out. Baiting that hook with only the right look. Lure in the sunshine. Ripples in the sweet tide. Rubber's going out of sight. Even if it takes all night. Ooh, I'm gonna catch me a winner. Cause I
good morning and welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen in the studio this morning with my guest co-host, Captain Alex Stilinski of Spot on Charters.
Good morning.
Good morning. We are rolling into the 8 a.m. hour of Real Talk Radio.
Flying.
1 hour. Done. Already. And we're going to actually head over to line one because we've got Dave Westra with Lear's Economy Tackle standing by. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Deb.
How's things going up there in North Fort Myers?
Everything's fine in North Fort Myers. Just a little chill this morning.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Keep it up there.
Yeah.
Don't push it south.
It's too late.
Yeah, well, the one thing that's notable in North Fort Myers is, unfortunately, Harriet's been missing for 24 hours.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Harriet the cat?
No, Harriet the Eagle at Pritchard's
place.
Oh,
that Harriet.
Harriet's been sitting on two babies up there for about 3 weeks now, and her husband, M15, he's been defending the place against other eagles. They've been some other eagles trying to get into the nest, I guess, to get hold of the babies, and it's just really unusual for a mama eagle to leave the nest like that. Particularly for that length of time, 24 hours. And when we drove by this morning, it must have been two dozen bird watchers there, I guess, waiting to see if
he comes
Harry
back.
Comes back. But comes I would back. almost bet that ain't going to happen.
Hmm. She must have a boyfriend.
They're pretty close. Their nest is pretty close to the road. And over the years, a couple of the eagles have been hit by vehicles.
So, oh.
But I would
well, hopefully that didn't
probably
happen.
Either through age succumbed or gotten into a fight with another eagle or an owl. Owls bother them all the time.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. I've seen that.
Yeah.
Owls are aggressive that way.
Yes. Owls are real aggressive. Well, you know, all of those birds are. You know, you watch big birds, and there's always little birds pestering them.
Yes.
There's always little birds chasing the big birds, and that's because when little birds have babies, the big birds go after their nest all the time. So when the big birds are out, the little ones, the littler birds just pester the hell out of them.
Are you trying to say owls are the bullies of the bird world?
Predator.
Well,
birds
of
prey,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
In human life, it's the same way. I walk into a nightclub or something when I was young, being like one of the biggest guys in there. I'll be darned if the littlest guy in there isn't going to come over and pick a fight with me. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, it's the same thing.
So, Dave, what's the scoop up in the river? How's the fishing been up that way?
Fishing's been okay. And in fact, I think last week I mentioned to you we'd gotten a few reports of sunshine bass being caught, and that's continued somewhat this week. We've had two or three of the young guys that have been fishing in around the Lock area and the Orange River area, and that's their reports there have been a couple sunshine bass mixed in with a few fairly nice snook fish, snook in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there've been some jacks marauding up around I-75, some pretty big jacks. That, you know, that's always a good fight up in that area there. Mm-hmm. Because they, you know, you got with the railroad trestle and everything there, you got some structure. They always seem to kind of head to that area there. The other thing, report that we've gotten this past week, and don't have anything really to do with the river, but it's been triple tailing, and
yeah,
we've gotten some really really good reports. Not so much in size, but numbers. We had one group out and they ran traps basically from, I'll say, Redfish Pass south, and every trap that they ran had fish on them. About every eighth trap, there would be a keeper size there. Then I had another report from a guy, and he actually fished from Captiva North, and he didn't have very much luck at all. Didn't hardly see any triple tail at all. But the southerly side of in the trap world like that always seems to be a bit better than the northern end. And the other thing too with triple tail, just because you don't see them on the trap doesn't mean that they're not there. They
That's
could
true.
Be down.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot of guys. There are a couple of guys that I know fish every marker that they see, whether it's in Pine Island Sound or whether it's the speed markers out in front of Fort Myers Beach or the trap markers that are out off of the islands. They stop and fish every one of them. If they don't see a triple tail on them, they will fish them deep, and you'd be amazed at the number that they pull off of the bottom or lower down the
in the water
down the rope line. You know,
yeah.
So
right.
Just because you don't see them doesn't mean they're not there. And so, you know, little jigs and things, I think it's kind of a fallacy. There's some people that say, you got to always fish them with shrimp. Well, that's not really true, because I know guys that use jigs, particularly one of the more better jigs to fish are the DOA Terrorize.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to work extremely well, fishing a little bit deeper on those markers. But anyway, folks, just don't pass them up. Stop and throw a jig or throw a bait on them and see what happens.
Yeah, and a lot of times if you make a couple of casts, they'll go down. But if you wait, if you just give it a little while, they'll come back up closer to the surface too.
Yeah,
yes.
We found them in the river, as far up the river, fairly consistently. As the Cape Coral Bridge or Midpoint Bridge, they hang around the mm-hmm. structured area there, the piling area there. People don't look for them there particularly, but they do come up the river. I've seen small ones under floating coconuts.
Yep.
In the river.
Leaves.
You know, and there are times when some of the crabbers in the river will find triple tail hanging on the their markers upriver. This is as far up as I-75. They'll find them hanging on those markers, and in some instances, the smaller ones have even gotten into the traps. So,
wow.
So, you know,
yeah.
their range is a little bit broader than a lot of people think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen them in the Gulf Stream, you know, a bunch of them on something floating through, you know, in the Keys or Miami and stuff. So, they're all over for sure.
Yeah, well, I've seen quite a few while I've been fishing offshore in the Keys on any structure. If there's a patch of weeds or any debris that's floating out there, they're under it.
You're running this time of year out in the Gulf and there's something floating, stop and look.
You got to stop and look.
Yeah, they're an amazing, really kind of amazing fish when you stop and figure their habit. Because if you fish a marker, now, let's say you have a particular crab trap that you find that are offshore, and you fish it, and you always seem to be catch something pretty nice off of that particular one, and you'll fish it and supposedly fish it out. You go back there 2 days later, there's another fish sitting on there. It's like they're waiting offshore to take up a space somewhere. I mean, they're pretty hard to figure out, but yeah, they're. They're the juveniles, the real, real small ones. That's where they, I guess that's where they're when they're born, they hang out in a sargassum weed kind of weed that's way offshore like that. And just like a lot of the other really small little triggerfish and filefish and stuff like that hang out underneath those mats outside. And then they they start growing up and come inside. They are an amazing animal.
Even when you're grouper fishing out, even 100 foot of water or whatever, if you're anchored up, before you fire those engines up, look back behind the boat, because a lot of times I've seen them come right up behind the boat. You're fishing and, you know, so always look or throw a free line of shrimp right behind the boat when you're sitting there fishing off the bottom. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the biggest ones I've seen have come up to the back of the boat.
Yep. You always got to be ready.
Yep.
Always be prepared. So, Dave, I was just going to say I had a question I wanted to ask you. I touched on it with Rob, and Alex and I talked about it a little bit, but I know this is a great question to ask you, too, because of the experience that you have with spooling line on reels for folks who are buying new reels. But when it comes to your line and fishing in the wind, getting more distance from your cast, improving your accuracy, are there any tips that you can give folks, things they should keep in mind, say, for example, when they're spooling line on the reel, getting their gear ready, that's going to help them in terms of their casting productivity once they get out on the water? Does that make sense?
No, kind of. There's some fellas that come in shop and we're spooling line on there, and I'll stop the machine and I'll say, is this full enough, or how full do you like it? And there's some people will come in and say, oh no, you know, fill it all the way up to the edge, because after I fish it for a while, I'll get it packed down. It'll be really packed down. Well, we put braided stuff on it really pretty hard. I mean, it's got to be, I don't know the right word for it, glass top hard as a tabletop. On there's got to be, it can't go on soft because it'll embed in itself, and you know, you end up getting a snag, and then you end up with the nasty wind knot kind of thing when you're casting. So I would say, you know, if you're actually a little bit lower, a little bit below the edge on in your spool when you go out on those windy days, you're probably going to be fine. I know Rob touched on it. You know, everybody likes to get out of the wind, but that's a lot of times not really where you need to be. You need to be on that windy side of the island right there, because the water's packed up and pushed up against the mangroves, where on the other side it's blown away and it's shallower, and you know, you may end up getting snagged up a little bit more. You know, a lot of people that are, I'll say, weekenders, if that's the right word for it, and not meaning to offend anybody, you know, tend to cast a little bit high in the air. Try to keep your cast low, just like above the water if you can. If you mm-hmm. notice, most of your better guides, particularly when they're fishing that mangrove area, they're using that real low kind of sidearm cast with the snap of the wrist and the bait skips up underneath the mangroves. Well, I mean, you can't do that if you're casting over your head. That just isn't gonna happen. And in a windy day, you're liable to end up in the bushes more than you are in the water. So, you know, just I'd say a little bit less line on your spool maybe
yep.
will help you a little bit. And there are reels that are better casting, spinning reels particularly, than others, that you tend to get a little bit more distance out of them. One of them is a reel that's probably been around for 30 years, and that's the Daiwa SS series reels, the 1300 and 1600 series. They had an elongated spool,
mm-hmm.
and they were probably the best long-distance casting spinning reels on the market and then maybe ever been made. Nowadays, the spools tend to be a little bit shorter and deeper and a little bit snubbier, if that's the right word for it. I don't know that it is. And they maybe don't cast quite as far as the elongated spools. And the elongated spools, you really had to watch out on that windy day, because you would end up in the bushes with that reel if you weren't careful. And some folks, once you get used to the feel of your rod and the castability of the outfit that you have, you can maybe feather the edge of that spool just a little bit to to control that line just a little bit better. It takes a little bit of skill, a little bit of work, but you may try that so you can shorten that cast just a little bit and maybe get it to drop where you need it to do. You know, the bait casting reels nowadays, they're such finely tuned reels, and based on stuff that was 40, 50 years ago, these spools now are extremely fast, and they have the cast control adjustment on the right-hand side of the reel underneath the handle, and that's imperative that you get that set right based on the line that you're using and the weight of the lure that you're casting. A lot of folks depend upon the magnetic control of the reel being the sole cast control feature of the reel, and I don't see it that way. That's secondary to the adjustment that adjusts the tension on the spool shaft. And then after you get that set right, you can monkey around with that magnetic control to suit yourself. But the primary adjustment, particularly with bait casters, is that adjustment that's underneath the star drag or the handle of your reel on the right side of the reel.
Yeah, I would say, I don't know if you noticed this too, Dave, but probably a couple of the big mistakes that I see on my boat on a regular basis is just people feeling like they need to cast super hard, which is actually counterproductive. You really want to let the rod do most of the work. And then try to avoid casting the knots through the guides.
Yeah.
People tend to reel up past the leader, and every time you cast the knot through the guide, not only is that causing excess wear and tear on your guides, but it's going to slow down your cast too.
Well, that too, and people tend to buy the wrong rod.
Right.
Yes.
And reel setup.
They don't have a balanced
setup.
What
they want to do.
That's a great point. Yep.
They if they look on the rod or ask whoever's selling it to them what the lure rating is on there, because if you have a rod that's rated a quarter to 5/8 of an ounce lure weight, and you're going to try to throw a nice, really light, pretty-looking lure that weighs 3/16 of an ounce, you're not going to have a very good day, I don't believe. I think you're going to try to overcast and apply too much effort into trying to get that lure out. And so when you buy, and this goes for spinning and bait casting both, more with bait casting than spinning, but when you're buying a rod, buy it for what you do. If you have to buy two rods, and two outfits to do what you want to do, that's what you need to do. And a lot of folks now are trying to go as light, as small as they possibly can, and try to do some things that your outfit
wasn't designed to do.
Right.
Yeah.
And, we also got
to, ask the guy that's selling it to you or the lady that's selling it to you and try to buy the outfit that's going to do what you want to do without effort. It really, casting does not take a lot of effort. It just takes a little bit of common sense about what you're doing and understanding what tools you have to work with.
Yep, that's very true. And the good thing is most of the rods these days have the lure weight rating right on the side of the blank. So that makes it easy.
Oh, yeah. By the way, before I leave, I know we're running out of time, and we're out of time, but I told Rick this joke. I got to laugh at him, so I got to tell it to you. So the guy's 85 years old, and he goes to the doctor for his annual physical. And the doctor, his blood work is great. His eyesight's good. His hearing is pretty good. They put a piece of paper out there and drew a circle on it and said, put the hands at 3 hours and 20 minutes, and the guy does that and everything. Everything's cool about the guy. And the doctor said, you're really, really in pretty good health, but what I have to ask you is, when's the last time you had sex? No. The guy said, oh, my goodness, I don't know. I think, let me call home and find out. So he goes, gets his cell phone out, he calls home. His wife answers the phone. He says, "Hun, when's the last time you had sex? We had sex." She says, "Who's calling?"
Oh, no.
Good answer.
Rick liked it. I think y'all would like that.
That goes back to the Eagle. Where is she at?
Oh, that was good, Alex. That was good. Way to bring it back full circle. It was great catching up with you, Dave. You have a great weekend. It was good talking to you, and we'll catch up with you next Saturday morning.
Appreciate it, guys.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That is Dave Westro with Lear's Economy Tackle. If they don't have it, you don't need it. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. We'll be back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida, online at ESPNSWFL.com.
Good morning, and welcome back to Real Talk. This is Captain Debbie Hansen in the studio this morning with my guest co-host, Captain Alex Dolinsky of Spot on Charters.
Good morning.
The man who brings Dunkin' Donuts and Mickey D's.
The healthy stuff.
Yeah. How are your donuts, Rick? Did you go for an old fashioned?
I haven't even hit the donuts yet. I haven't hit the donuts yet.
What?
I had a couple of the McDonald's sandwiches, and I just got to rest for a bit.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you got to let things settle.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
I was getting concerned.
Oh, no. They're not going anywhere.
All right. So, Alex, I know. So we left off talking a little bit about fishing the mangroves versus fishing docks versus fishing the oyster bars.
Right.
And you were talking about the fact that you are getting ready to start fishing the oyster bars a little bit more.
Correct. All temperature related for me.
It's all temperature related. And once you start seeing those water temperatures come up around 72, 75 degrees.
You got it.
That's when you want to be fishing those oyster bars.
That's when I start looking the bars and seeing more schools of, yeah. There's fish there now, but onesies, twosies type of, you know. Mm-hmm. But they'll start schooling up more. When that water warms up, just for the fact that the bait's in there more and, you know, that kind of thing. So,
yeah. So the one thing, too, I wanted to touch on, you know, there's people talk about the 90-10 rule, that 90% of the fish are within 10% of an area. So what about eliminating unproductive water? When you're going out there and you're looking at all the structure, the mangroves, the oyster bars, you're looking at docks. What are you looking for that's going to tell you, okay, this is definitive that fish are not going to be in a particular spot?
Well, you know,
at a given time.
I'm combining, obviously, wind. So what direction of the bay am I going?
Mm-hmm.
South wind's going to give us more water sooner. North wind's going to hold back the water.
Mm-hmm.
So water will come in later. So that's kind of dictating where I start. But whether it's dock structure or mangrove structure or oyster bar, when I get to that area in the tide phase that I want to be in, I'm looking for action. Birds feeding, what mm-hmm. type of birds are feeding. Is there fish jumping, you know, mullet, finger mullet?
Is there
mullet.
Activity? No, right. There's not.
If it's
not
dead water,
birds.
Meaning it, you know, it looks right to you as far as current and tide, but there's mm-hmm. nothing, you know, busting the water surface. There's no snapping of fish. There's no birds. I'm probably going to keep going.
What about water color or clarity?
I like, in the Estero Bay, I like what we call silty, where I just barely see the bottom in 2 or 3 feet.
Mm-hmm.
If it's super clear, I'm going to look more for structure that the fish can hide in versus open water like around an oyster bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, so I would fish, super clear water, high tides. I'd fish the oyster bars if I could at low light, early morning, late evening, if the tide presents at right midday. The fish may not be there as much because, you know, they're an easier target for birds and other prey.
So. Mm-hmm.
But silty water, like, you know, we like, which means just a little bit of sand stirred up in it, they can be almost anywhere.
Yeah, and so when you were out last week and then the first part of this week, what have you been seeing with regards to average size, say, for the trout and the redfish and Estero Bay?
All been in the slot.
Yeah.
For me.
That's nice.
Yeah, and
that's
the
awesome.
Reds that I have been finding have been, you know, majority of them have been at 18 to 22. Mm-hmm. I found a few that were over 30, and those were in deeper water, so.
Using shrimp?
All on shrimp. I've got pinfish, whitebait, and shrimp when I went out, and even some crabs in some cases, and they all been hitting shrimp and half a shrimp on a jig. Even the big, big reds that I've been getting, the two or three over 30s were all on
a half a shrimp.
Half a shrimp on a jig, letting it sit deeper water and just almost what I call rod holder fishing. Throw it in, waiting for the rod to bend, don't move.
Mm-hmm.
So the guys I get on my boat this time of year that just can't let a bait sit catch less than the guy who listens to me and when I say, let that sit.
Yeah.
You know, constantly
I'm talking
minutes,
moving
five,
it around.
Ten, right.
Yeah.
Fish are just a little slower when it's cooler. So.
Yeah. Well, and
they eat less too sometimes.
Yeah. And so you think talking about this front that just came through last night and the conditions that we've got right now. So for you, ideally, if a client called you and said, all right, I want to go out fishing, Alex, I've got some flexibility over the next, say, 2 weeks. How many days do you like to give it once a front like this comes through before you know that the bite is going to be fairly consistent or reliable?
This particular front is pretty quick, and I don't think we've had a lot of rain out of it and stuff. So 2 days. You know, if we get a bad one that's muddied up the water and the water's super muddy, then 3 or 4 days, you know, before it's easier to find the fish. So we're still going to find the fish. We're just going to have to work harder to find them in these conditions like tomorrow and stuff like that. But
right. And you're fishing different types of areas.
Yeah,
and
yeah, I'll go back further into the bay where there might be cleaner water or a deeper dock. And just soak the bait. Let the bait sit there. I'll throw in extra bait to chum it up so the fish can smell it and get to it. So right now I think they just feed on smell and taste more so than action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, water warms up, the water gets clear. Then now all of a sudden the fish are basically sight eating, seeing something move. So they're reacting and eating something versus...
Well, their metabolism is slower right now because of those cooler water temperatures. But like you were saying, once we get those water temps back up in the 72, 75 degree range, from a freshwater perspective, man, once I start seeing 75 degrees, that's when I know it's
And we start seeing winds out of the south. You know, like tomorrow morning, we got north winds, but by 10, it's supposed to be south-southwest.
Yeah.
Well, that's instantly going to add 5, 10 degrees water temp. Once that pushes water in out of the southwest, fish are going to feel that and start moving on it.
Yep.
So tomorrow afternoon through the following morning should be better.
Yep.
South, good. South.
Yes. So south and southwest winds.
Yep.
What's the old saying? Winds from the east, fish bite the least.
Right.
So you abide by that?
Eh, you know. My friend Matt DeAngelis, he does well in east winds when
I
can't.
With what we do, you got to make it happen regardless. But all right, I'm going to head over to line one because we've got Gator Tom standing by.
Good morning. Good morning, my favorite folks out there. I got a little bit of frog in my mouth today.
Oh.
Good morning.
More so than usual? That's a frog in your throat, Tom? Really?
Yep, that's frog in my throat. We had frog legs last night. You know, I've been trying to call in since that Oscar guy was on, what was it, 2 weeks ago, after you took that big vacation during the holidays? And I was going to tell you my Oscar story. Large Marge and I took her grandkids, mid-sized Millie and portly Paul, up to see the Magic Rat.
Up to see the what, Gator Tom?
Magic Rat.
The Magic Rat.
Orlando.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to, but anyway, we're up there, and the kids said to us before we're going to go over to Feeney Park, Pop-Pop. And I'm like, where do you get that Pop-Pop from? I'm just, like, messing around with Grandma here now. But okay. So that's a story for another time, for an adult conversation. You know, that little boy listens to the radio show. But anyway, they said they want to catch Oscar before we go to the park.
Uh-huh.
And I said, oh, great. And I went inside, took a quick shower, put on my Columbia fishing shirt, and said, come on, kids, let's go. And they're sitting in the living room. They said, Pop, Pop, no, Oscar's not on for another 5 minutes. They were waiting for Sesame Street.
That's the first Oscar I knew.
Yeah, yeah, first Oscar you knew. Well, you're a youngster there, boy.
That green guy that hung out in the garbage can.
Yep.
Some of my favorite people hang out in dumpsters. You know, I got a friend of
somehow
mine.
Somehow that doesn't surprise me, Gator Tom.
No, I got a friend of mine up in Swampville. He has a three-dumpster house, you know, mm-hmm. really nice with a porta-potty attached.
There you go, living large.
I'll tell you what, he's living large. And they connect by, you know, those big round tubes that DOT puts in.
Culverts.
Yeah. Oh, okay, there you go. Uh-huh.
Yep, and, yeah. You know, you can crawl from one garbage dumpster to the other. Boy, uh-huh. Oh, boy, it's real nice.
Well, you know, some people catch fish out of sewers, Gator Tom. So, I mean, do you have a sewer fishing report for us?
Yeah, but, you know, what's wrong
fish
with
through, like,
sewers?
A manhole cover or something? Come on, you got to
eat septic trout.
We did that for a long time, the manhole cover. You pop it up and do some night fishing, and they believe you're ice fishing.
There you go.
You know, we got good, you know, we think a lot.
Yeah, you don't need an auger for that kind of ice fishing. But
you know,
yeah.
Rick, I'm no longer drinking the rum.
That's not true. That's not true.
Well, maybe if you take a swig and swish it around, Gator Tom, and get rid of that frog.
I think what he means is he's not drinking the rum before like 7 a.m., which...
Yeah. No,
what, are you kidding me? I've been up since 4:23.
Exactly, so 7 is the perfect time to start.
You were texting us at like 6:30. Right.
Well, let me see. Yeah, about that time. But, no, I found this stuff, Twisted Tea. Oh, my goodness. You just add a little bit of lemonade to it, and you get pulled over, and all the cop smells is lemonade.
We're not going to be sharing tips like that on air, Gator Tom. We're not condoning that. No, we're not.
Everybody doesn't realize you're riding around in a limo and you got a driver. So
exactly.
You got to point that out.
I do got a driver. I got red sock tip.
That's right. Let's make that clear.
Let's make that abundantly clear. All right, Gator Tom, we got to get back to fishing conversation here. So it was great to hear from you, but...
Oh. But no buts about. Oh yeah, uh-huh. Gator Tom. I need a shout out here. Gator Tom needs a 22-foot rented trailer for about 2 months. Anybody that has one, just shoot me a line at Gator Tom from Swampville, all one word. I'll rent the trailer for 2 months. I have to have some engine work done on my boat.
All right. Well, you put it out there, Gator Tom. So
all right. Gator Tom from Swampville at gmail.com.
Signing off. You have a great weekend, Gator Tom.
You guys have
behave.
A good day.
Okay.
Bye.
Behave.
What kind of word is that? I'm appalled by that. Bye.
Bye. Oh, my goodness, Rick.
Yes, I know. I know.
Man.
I always struggle because, you know, we're a show of the people, you know, so I don't want to deny anybody the opportunity to join us. But then I always regret it after Gator Tom, one of his, you know.
Yeah. Well, and we got about two minutes here.
We got just enough time to bounce back before we have to go to break. No pressure, Alex. But
I'm going to bounce back by giving a huge shout out and congrats to my friend Captain Angie Scott of the Woman Angler and Adventurer. So she won the Outdoor Media Summit Award this past week for the best podcast. So shout out to
Angie.
Good for
her. That's
awesome. She was here in the studio, and I also have to give her a huge congrats because she and I went out fishing on Wednesday and she landed her personal best peacock bass.
That was a beautiful,
I'm gonna say, about
fish,
three and a half, 4 pounds.
Yeah, I like the pattern on that fish.
Yeah, it was pretty, really cool. It was speckled.
Less stripes, more
almost.
Speckles, right.
Yeah. She was saying it almost looked like a QR code, the pattern on
there
that
you go.
Peacock
That's
bass.
True. That's true.
It did, kind of. Yeah. So she got that on an orange TRD. It was a Ned rig. believe it or not. And then I got to give a shout out to my good friend and client, Bob Linish. He went out with me on Thursday and got about 8 to 10 peacocks and Mayan cichlids, all fishing suspended jerkbaits. So nice. We had a blast fishing artificials both on Wednesday and Thursday, and two really good trips. So, all right, we got to take off for another break. More with Captain Alex when we come back. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. Stay tuned.
But I'll take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio on ESPN Southwest Florida. Everywhere with the ESPN Southwest Florida app.
Good morning, good morning. Welcome back to Real Talk Radio. This is Captain Debbie Hansen. I'm in the studio this morning with my guest co-host, Captain Alex Dolinsky of Spot on Charters. Getting ready to roll into the 9 a.m. hour.
Already.
Cap, I know. Rick, great tune.
Yeah, thank you.
Channeling some Soft Cell.
Yeah, Soft Cell,
Tainted
very good.
Tainted Love.
Yeah, it's one of those songs a lot of people know the song, but they don't remember the who played it because they were kind of a, you know, one-hit wonder, one hit. As we call them, you know.
Yeah, I had the cassette tape.
Good call.
Yeah, actually, yeah. It had the extended version of the song on it.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I had Soft Cell, so it was like Ministry, Soft Cell. Do you remember Ministry from back in the
heavy.
Day? Their album With Sympathy was like one of the best.
Yeah,
one
they were kind of like Nine Inch Nails before Nine Inch
Nails.
Yeah, like real heavy.
Pretty Hate Machine, best album ever.
Industrial music. Wow, this surprises me.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
I didn't know you were into like such kind of.
She's the aficionado in
she
it.
She is.
I'm gonna throw.
I mean, I know you're a big fan of like Duran Duran, and I guess I didn't know.
I was totally into alternative.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Completely.
Wow.
Do you remember Ned's Atomic Dustbin?
I do. I remember the
you
name.
You do?
I remember the name, but I can't say that I've ever actually heard anything from them.
Wow.
Were they like that too? Kind of a heavy.
Yeah, they were kind of, I'm sure, I don't even really know how you could relate. Yeah, Ned's Atomic Dustbin. I'm trying to think of the name of probably one of their most popular songs, but
how about I find
best.
It for the next
yes intro. you got to do it.
Okay.
You got to do it.
This is amazing. You know someone for years.
I didn't know.
And then all of
but
a
you have
see,
no idea about their musical
well,
preferences.
Right. But I mean, I had some because you've commented many times that you like certain things I play.
Yeah.
But for you to throw out like Ministry and, you know, stuff like that's kind of surprising.
Yeah. They're
She's well rounded.
She is.
Huh?
Yeah, she is.
Ministry.
Well, that's not good fishing music, though, right? You don't want to be blasting like Nine Inch Nails out on the boat, right?
On your way from spot to spot.
It depends. Yeah. After you catch that monster fish, you're blasting that on the way
home.
And
another captain pulls up next to you, crank that music.
Okay.
Scare them fish away.
That's it. So we got a text from Day Baseball asking how the recreational stone crabbing is going, or if he missed that conversation.
Good question.
No, you did not miss that conversation. And that is a really good question, because as far as access, at least in Estero Bay,
there isn't
much. So I don't think people are as focused on recreational stone crabbing, at least
I would say not
Bay.
Right now.
But let's throw it out there. So if anybody has any scoop, has heard anything, go ahead and shoot us a text, 239-337-3776, and we will share that information with you.
The commercial side has been good. I mean, there's traps everywhere. So.
Yeah.
And all the restaurants have them, but
yeah,
as far as access, you know, for
around
everyday
here,
people, most people's lifts
challenging.
Don't work if they even have a boat. So
yeah, yeah. And so, Alex, I wanted to kind of jump back into the conversation about casting and increasing your casting distance and working on your accuracy. And I know there were a couple things that you wanted to bring up with regards to that topic. And you also wanted to mention something about reels, I believe.
Reels. Yeah, Dino's favorite reels. Outgoing thing was tight lines, right? Was
Dino,
one of his things to take a kid
Yeah,
through.
That was something he used to say all the time, which, by the way, for those who are newcomers to this show, so Dino was the one who started the show. This is going back, gosh, what, 25 years?
Or better. Yes.
So we got to give a shout-out to
Dino,
Dino Hicks,
who was the original owner of Masturbate and Tackle, and that's where this show and all that originated.
And then he had a company called Reels, Inc., right?
Reels, Inc., which was a higher-end reel rod place here. Yep.
But without Dino, we wouldn't have a reel talk.
Amen.
So we've got to remember that.
And yeah, his tight lines is something to actually apply. And people, you know, they overcast, especially now with braided line. You always need to look down and make sure that line is tight.
Yeah.
You take a cast, close the bail by hand, is a habit I get into on spinning,
and
then
pull
to make sure that line's tight, even if you have to reel back a little bit. Mm-hmm. It makes a big difference on future when you go to fight a fish or the wind grabs it and loops it wrong, and next thing you know, you got a wind knot. So that's one thing. Always keep a tight line. When you're working a jig, always try to keep conscious after 10 throws maybe, to throw out one time and reel back in with the line through your fingers to tighten it back on the reel.
Mm-hmm.
Is something I do. Overcasting, people that swing the rod like a baseball bat or a hockey stick versus pivoting it and letting the rod do the work, that will also loosen the line after 4 or 5 casts like that, especially if you're throwing into the wind or throwing an overweighted or an underweighted setup.
Yeah.
So, you know, good casting is more finesse, twisting the rod, you know, where you're holding your hand above the reel and below the reel, and you just pivot your hand. You're not swinging that rod.
Yeah. Again, it's letting the rod do the work, and not, you don't always have to whip it or cast super hard, which people tend to do.
We were talking with Dave, is matching your rods and reels.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of reels have a different angle, how they sit on the seat, and the eyes are all different lengths, and how many eyes are on the rod. And, you know, I was taught that it's very important that when you reel in, the line touch the whole circle of the eye as you're reeling it in, the first 3 eyes on the guide from the reel. If they don't, it's not set up right. And therefore, when you cast it out and that line's spinning out, if it's not spinning through the whole eye all the way around it, it's probably going to go around the eye and get caught up on it and then wind knot.
Yeah.
So you want your rod set up and basically matching somewhat.
Yes.
So when I have my rods built, that's what I do, is I tell them, okay, I'm going to use these reels. And sometimes they'll say, well, can you bring in one of the reels? And then he adjusts the guides and eyes and the length to them and all that. And you can still do that with store-bought, but you just got to, you know, balance everything out and make sure they're kind of meant for each other. It makes a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, too, people tend to overpack the spool, which can create wind knots, too.
Absolutely.
And then just being really mindful of how you're spooling that line on so that there's no line twist, and from time to time letting out some line behind the boat to get
as you're idling out, take everything off, let 100 yards out, just close the reel and let it drag.
I was always told, so as a general rule of thumb, when you're putting line on your reels, to leave about 1/8 of an inch from the edge of that spool, essentially.
I do that with braid. With mono, I fill it to over capacity because, like he was saying earlier, the first time you go out and you load that back up, the mono, it's going to actually go on tighter.
Same with a conventional reel
for grouper. Yeah. I'll kind of overfill it and then pack it back on with a fish the first time. But braid, yeah, go just a little bit under.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I always do that too. And I think too, when you make that cast, when you're casting with braid, you have to think that when your lure, your bait hits the water, your line is going out at a certain speed and trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
And then when your line hits the water, a lot of times that's when wind knots happen. So if you can put your finger on the line just to slow it down a little bit before it hits the water, that can help prevent.
Another big tip too is after you cast with spinning gear, close the bail on the reel by hand.
Don't
whip it.
Always.
One, your reel's going to last longer. Two, you know it's shutting right. And three, that gets you in the habit of making sure that that line's in the little cup that, you know, spools it back on correctly.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Those are good, really, really good tips.
And keep that
Alex.
Reel, the line on the reel clean by hosing it off a little bit. Use Reel Magic. Keep that stuff slick and less salt build up on that in your eyes, the better your cast is too.
Yeah. So, and for example, with braid, Alex, like how often do you change out your braid on your reels?
I'm doing mine once a month when I'm chartering heavy.
Yeah.
You know, which would equate probably to 6-7 months. When that braid starts to lose its color.
I was going to ask you, what right. indicates to you that it's time to change out right. your braid?
I buy about 10 reels a year, and I keep one or two old spools from the year before because I generally buy the same reels.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll take that. When that starts to wear out, I'll reel that onto the empty spool because under the wore out line is good line. And so now it goes on that spool, and I can use the other back half of that line
mm-hmm.
instead of just cutting it and throwing it away.
And you
sense?
Use mono backing on your spool most before you
them,
put on your
most
braid.
Of them. Some of these newer spools that aren't as deep, I just go straight braid.
Yep. How much mono backing do you use when you do use it?
About half of the reel.
Half of the spool.
Reel spool depth. Right?
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. All right. So I want to ask you a few questions too about certain tide periods and what particular tide phases you correspond to different species. I know we've got 2 minutes, so we're not going to have time to cover it all before we have to head to break, but we can pick it back up after Steve's segment at 9. So when we're referring to, say, somebody calls you and they're like, oh, Alex, I want to go out and chase redfish today,
right.
which is
right.
what you do, spot on charters.
Spot on.
So what is there a certain like phase of an incoming tide?
If I can pick
the
day
for
them, I'm going to look for a day that has a good, strong incoming. And I'm going to look for them around the docks at low tide. And then as soon as that tide gets about an hour of incoming, I'll start looking into the shallows as they graze like cattle, as they graze across from the channels, across the flats, back to the oyster bars and the mangroves.
Start going into.
Yeah, I go in. I try to go in earlier because my theory is I need to be in front of these fish.
Mm-hmm.
As they come through from one area to the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking, that's basically what I'm looking for. And if I can pick winds, which obviously can't, but if I can a couple of days out and say, well, Tuesday we got south-southwest winds, let's go then, I know that I have a quicker tide, a warmer tide, and that's when I'm going to focus on that.
Yeah, redfish. And then, yeah, that's great information. And then real quick, and then we'll head off to a break. Also, and I know you fish a lot of live bait. You fish a lot of shrimp and
live bait, cut bait.
Live bait mm-hmm. and cut bait. But if you are fishing artificials and you're out there on the water, how much do you want to lead the fish? So when you're making a cast, you see a fish busting on the surface, you see a redfish tailing, how do you want to present?
I try to lead the fish twice what you mentally think you should. If that makes sense. So if you want to be way, the fish feel that, they
mm-hmm.
hear it, they see it.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be, you know, you don't want to spook them with it, and you certainly don't want to have the bait swim at them. You want to have it swim across
and
them.
You don't want it to land right
yeah,
on their nose.
No bait, natural bait's going to, right, do that.
Right.
It's going to swim away or quarter the fish. So,
so you
give
wanna
it plenty of lead time because
you
if you have too much, you can make a second cast anyway.
So what would you say, like 5 or 6 feet?
10 feet.
10 feet. All right, that's a good number. Okay, we're going to head off to another break. You're listening to Real Talk on ESPN Southwest Florida and on the ESPN Southwest Florida app. Stay tuned.
I got my toes in the water, ass in the sand, not a worry in the world, a cold beer in my hand. Life is good today. Life is good today. Well, the plane touched down just about 3 o'clock and the city's still on my mind.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.